I gotta pause really quick. You have to cover the fact that it's underwear. It's making me crack up every time I look at
Well, just because I'm using underpants as my pop filter,
you can.
They're still pretty smooth.
Welcome to Rated Aid, episode number 65 for the website nerdappropriate.com. It is June 24th, currently, right?
2012. Yeah.
2012, and we are here. It's old school time. It's just Scott, Ash, and myself today.
No girls allowed.
No
NGA.
Girls. Boys club.
Yeah.
And it's episode 65, so we can retire.
Yeah,
I know, right?
Yeah,
we're gonna have a sword fight
now.
Yeah.
So if everyone's wondering where Hillary is, she's actually currently in China, and that's not a joke. She went on vacation with her husband, and they're off enjoying the sights and smells and adventures of China. Look out for Mongols! I hear they're terrifying.
Are they still an issue there right now?
I don't know, man. I haven't been there.
Oh,
it's
geez.
A big place. I hear it's a big place. You never
it
know.
It's a big place. It's
Those
possible.
Those Mongols can be quite dangerous.
Yeah, it's possible.
But we have a pretty jam-packed episode filled with stuff. It is pretty intense, and I can't wait to talk about it because there's a whole lot here.
Yeah, yeah. So what have you guys been up to? What did you guys do this week, Ash?
Oh, I'm still not at home. I'm in Western North Carolina, sort of like in the boonies. So last week I was in California at a wedding, and that was a lot of fun. I was staying at my buddy Mark's house. Now I'm back in this cabin in the woods again, and it's a lot of fun. We've been doing outdoorsy stuff a lot. I'm kind of doing this weird like. Get myself prepped for Comic-Con, like training. It's kind of like super nerdy, but I'm like, you need a lot of energy for Comic-Con. So we've been like running like every day, and like I haven't had an energy drink in like 5 days now.
What?
I'm getting
That's impressive.
Yeah, I know. I had like 2 days of debilitating headaches. Actually, it started at night, so I'd get this like shooting pain behind my eye, and it was terrifying. But yeah, so far so good. So just enjoying myself,
Hearts hanging on out. Fire, I brought, man.
Yeah, we brought our Xboxes, so we're not like totally cut off. So I've still been playing games and stuff, which is great.
Hell yeah.
So, what about you, gentlemen?
Scott, what have you been up to?
This week was pretty. It felt rough. I don't know. It felt long, but somehow went by fast once it was over. I caught up on some movies. I saw the Sherlock Holmes Game of Shadows, and I saw Red Tails. Have you guys seen Red Tails?
No, that's the Lucasfilms.
Right? Yeah, it was surprising. I mean, I don't know if surprising is the right word, but it was good.
Good.
I think he had kind of has like a flavor for this like nostalgic thing, and I thought that the use of like all the colors in the movie were like very saturated, and I thought that was sort of reminiscent of almost like when they used to colorize the movies back in the day, kind of had that vibe most of the times because everything pops so much, but
yeah,
it was a lot of fun. It was a great movie.
I heard mixed stuff about it. So
yeah, he said that he could have made, obviously he always writes too much. So he could have made two more movies out of it. And, he purposely had to make this one sort of more action oriented and didn't really have opportunity to explore the stories that he wanted.
I thought he actually said that he wanted to make three movies. Like the plan was, but then this one bombed so bad that there will not be three movies.
Right.
It's unfortunate.
It's kind of a bummer because I think the material for this movie and like the action in this movie could really warrant like two more films. But
there
you have it. And I played some games and did the Mass Effect challenge. So there you go.
Good times.
Awesome.
Yes, sir.
I did as well. What about yourself?
I took a little mini trip for family up to the Cape this weekend, and that was nice, which is where my mom was born. So I got to show Melissa that part of town. And then It's just been busy with the new job and everything. I've just been working long days, and they're doing like a product release in a week, so it's been just a lot of that going on.
Slammed, brutal.
But yeah. Otherwise, did you doing all right?
Did you see Summer Glau at the Cape?
I did not see Summer Glau.
I thought there'd
be
a Cape joke coming in here.
Yeah.
Were you aware that the Cape was canceled when you went to it?
I meant Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Oh.
My mother was born in a town called Falmouth.
Oh, wow.
Excellent.
I also started
like a real town.
I started reading the George Washington, A Life, which is like a huge 2,000-page biography of George Washington.
Oh, awesome.
And I'm enjoying the crap out of it. So
he's a pretty interesting guy, huh?
He is, yeah. It's weird because they don't have any info on him for like the first half of his life. Like him growing up as a kid, there's no real, like, nothing was really written about him. There's no papers or any letters or anything
like
that.
Jesus.
Sort of.
I guess sort of, yeah, in a way.
Yeah.
But then he kind of kicked his life into gear really young. He was like 18 when he was in the army and was like a general at the age of 22 or whatever. So it's pretty, pretty, or not general, but something along the lieutenant, colonel, lieutenant, or something like that. But interesting.
Inspirational dude.
Yeah.
George Washington.
Let's do the rundown.
Butter the loaf.
Let's butter that loaf.
Grease the old gears.
Cut that meat. You guys remember? You remember that Peyton Manning commercial where he's like,
"No, I don't."
Which one?
He went to the deli. He was like in all these weird situations, and he was like, "Cut that meat!" And he was like cheering on the guy at the butcher or whatever.
Was it Peyton Manning or was that the?
I think it was.
No, that was
you're talking about that old Dave Coulier.
That was the Brett.
It was a
one where he was. Or no, Favre.
Is a Peyton Manning MasterCard.
I thought it was the
I found the link.
One, or Monday quarterbacking one. Which
there
one?
There you go. I'm gonna derail this podcast here.
We broke it. We broke it.
There you
it.
Go. That's the link right there.
Man,
oh, where'd you put
prepared.
The?
Prepared.
Oh, jeez.
It's about like 10 seconds into the commercial.
I thought. Which one's the Sunday quarterbacking one then?
I don't know.
I keep saying Sunday. Monday quarterbacking one.
That was probably a different Peyton Manning commercial. He did like tons of them.
I thought it was Brett Favre, but I might be wrong.
But anyways, you'll get to cut that meat there in about 10 seconds.
Nice.
Cut that meat. Okay. So anyways, we're going to talk about Microsoft Surface. We're going to talk about games that go flash and shouldn't be. We're going to talk about Xbox Rewards, Xbox Summer of Arcade, Amazon Television News, Nintendo 3DS, Transformers 4, of course the huge surprise Mass Effect Extended Cut, which is probably going to be coming out, probably be out by the time you're listening to this podcast.
That's right.
And then in our reviews, we're going to do for Summer Game Pile, we're going to talk about the Gunstringer and Syndicate. Matt's going to talk about Besiege 2, which is a Kindle Fire game. I saw the movie Brave just a few hours ago, and then Ash is going to talk about Dawn of the Seeker, the Dragon Age film. Correct?
Yes.
Right on. And then this week's excellent question of the week comes from Matt. And the question is, if you could have any job in the Star Wars universe that wasn't a Jedi or a bounty hunter or anything awesome and cool, what the heck would you do? So we actually have some very awesome and cool answers to this question.
Yes.
Sweet.
News.
So Microsoft announced last week when we were on the podcast, I think Hillary said something about it, that they had come out saying they were going to have an announcement on Thursday of the past week. So they had it, and they announced a product that pre-existed, but they changed what it is, called the Microsoft Surface. So Microsoft Surface used to be a table. It was a full table, touchscreen table that they – I don't know if they really sold them. I guess they did sell them, but – mostly I saw them rolled out for like demos where people did these like crazy awesome things. I saw D&D get played on it. It looked really slick.
It was supposed to be something you could do at a restaurant where it's like they showed people dividing up the check. By
just
pulling items around on the table. Yeah.
Just a really awesome concept, but not really ever sold or marketed. But what this is a couple of tablets. So Scott, if you've got some info on this.
Yeah. Actually that tablet, the old Microsoft Surface, which was the table, is called Microsoft Pixel Sense now. So,
ooh, Pixel Sense, what a great name.
Yeah, so I don't know. Microsoft branding, there you go. So anyways, yeah, so Microsoft had this secretive press conference, and it was super hip and like sort of Apple-esque in some ways. And basically what they did was they announced that they're going to make a tablet, which is kind of exciting because they don't make hardware.
Right.
And there's been a lot of talk about whether or not this is something that they're actually doing and going to start throwing weight into, or if it's really just a way to like kick the OEMs in the butt and say like, hey, look, you know, this is what you can do, like be inspired by this and make stuff too. But
very cool.
Pretty much what it is, it's going to be a sort of a platform for Windows 8. It's a tablet. It's cool.
It's two
because,
tablets.
Yeah, it's actually two tablets. So yeah. They're going to make one on ARM processor, which is like a low power mobile processor. And then they're going to do an Intel one as well, which is that tablet is actually going to be thicker and almost like a laptop replacement. But probably the cool thing from a hardware perspective about this tablet is that they made a cover just the same way the iPad has a cover, except this cover has a keyboard built into it. So when you the tablet has a kickstand on it, so when you put the tablet down, flip the kickstand out, and flip the lid down, there's like a looks like some kind of touch keyboard. If it's like capacitive, it's not like normal keys, but they are actually going to make a normal keyboard as well.
And it comes with a touch pad on it, that so like you can actually use it like a laptop. The main distinction is that this keyboard cover is not hard. It is like the smart cover for the iPad. So you can't actually hold it in your lap and use it. It does need a surface if you're going to use the keyboard part of it to put it down on. But otherwise, it looks like a pretty slick piece. I mean, it's funny because I was reading the tech blogs afterwards, and I got both sides of it, which was like, you know, the super hardcore, the MG Siegler, like pro Apple people going like, this is a boring piece of junk, and they're spitting in their OEM's faces, and it's going to be horribly marketed and tank like everything else that Microsoft does. And then I saw people who were like, wow, Microsoft actually steps up to the plate and pulls something off for once and makes like a gorgeous piece of hardware that looks really nice. And, you know, like literally both sides of the story, like complete opposite opinions coming from both camps. But
yeah,
this is something I'm excited for. I mean, I'm a Windows guy in the house, and really, like, I was sort of holding out to see what a Windows 8 tablet was going to look like to decide whether or not I was going to get this or an iPad. Yeah. But this is what I really want, because I want to be able to integrate with Xbox and do, you know, Windows Live gaming. And
I think an important question is, if, you know, do you think Microsoft is going to update this in a cycle the way that Apple does? I mean, that's what, you know, keeps Apple new and fresh, is every year they have brand new stuff. And do you think like every single year there's going to be a new Surface tablet? You know,
I would say no, but
it's hard to keep up with Mac at this point.
I mean, but you should be assured that the software will be updated, because it's going to be the same thing that's running on the desktops and laptops normally. Well,
it is and it isn't. So the cheap one, the other problem is they've announced no timeline and no price. They said
these are the drawbacks.
Kind of amorphous of, it's going to be in the fall, and we're not telling you how much this thing's going to cost at all. Well, no. Here's what's weird is they said it's competitive to the ultra portable laptops that exist now. That's what they said.
They're talking about the Intel machines, right?
Right, I guess. They didn't say anything about the RT. So the other one's running Windows RT, which is like it's literally just the Metro interface of Windows 8. There's no true hardcore Windows running behind it. So you're not going to get all of the applications that come with Windows. It's not like you're going to be able to run whatever the hell you want on it. It's only going to run Metro apps. And it's like basically a tablet version of their phone.
It'd be like an iPad.
It will be like an iPad. The problem is that the iPad has some 60,000 apps already for it, and Windows Metro is lagging hardcore. The phone, it's the biggest reason I won't get the phone, is because I know that the things I rely on Android don't exist in the Windows platform, which is troublesome. But I'm really interested in it just because I want this stuff to succeed. I was a Zune fan, as we all know. You know, I mean, as much of that thing was like horribly marketed, it was a nice piece of hardware. I was laughing when people were like, Microsoft's not traditionally a hardware company. And I'm like, really? Because I can name the Zune. I can name the Xbox. Like, they've had plenty of hardware things they make. It's not like they don't do hardware at all. It's just they're maybe – I just don't think people equate Microsoft Wins hardware. Like, I don't think Microsoft's Xbox gets equated with Microsoft ever.
That's weird, isn't it? That makes no sense.
It's weird.
And for whatever reason, the same stigma now that follows like Nintendo around is the same one that follows Microsoft around sans Xbox. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like anytime either a company wants to announce something, it's like, oh, here we go again. You know, same problem.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No, it's just they're not cool right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
But I mean, like, I'm not looking for a status symbol though. I want a piece of hardware that integrates with my living situation, which is what I hope this is going to be. I'm excited for this.
Yeah. I'm excited too. I actually think that I don't know that it's what I would love, honestly, is I would still get the iPad still sits in a different place to me. It's just this weird entertainment device that, you know, you can consume and do whatever you want with. And I feel like the coolest thing about this, if the Surface Pro is what I think they're calling it, right? The Microsoft Surface Pro.
Oh, the Intel machine?
Yeah. If that is like sub $600-$700, I would be super interested in that one. Well, I have a feeling it's going to be close to $1,000.
I would imagine that the, you know, like obviously the price point for the 32 gigabyte ARM tablet has to be $500.
Has to.
And then
it cannot be, it should be less. It should be $400.
Yeah, it really should be less. And then, you know, with the Intel machine, like I thought, like in my mind, I thought it was going to be $800 for their base model.
I think I just feel like it's too much. I know it's competing with laptops. It's just a lot of money for what is not a laptop traditionally. It's a weird because no matter how powerful it is or how awesome or what it does, they're competing with the iPad at $500. Period. Sure. It doesn't matter.
Yep, this is true. People are going to see the Intel machine and still equate it to the iPad, which is not entirely correct. But I mean, we're not talking about I guess us. We're talking about consumers. Yeah. You walk into Best Buy and you look at two machines. And you go, that one's $500. I'm buying the iPad.
Now, if that RT one is like $350, $400, and the Pro one $600, I think they're totally perfectly priced at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you can make the argument for the Pro and say like, oh, well, you're getting Windows with this, and you're getting this and this and this, and like it's strong and it's got a lot of power behind it. But otherwise, I don't know. It's just a risky argument to me. But I guess
So, I mean, we have a machine now that's got like USB port, Display Port.
HDMI too, right? Mini
HDMI, I think, something like that. Yeah, it's got a camera on it. So I mean, really, like, it's a great looking piece of hardware. Like, the covers come in multiple colors, so it's kind of like it's trendy in that way. And really, the only stumbling block is they didn't announce what the price was or when you could get it. So now we have to wait and see, which is always a bummer.
Yeah. Well, and I think the problem with them not announcing the price is that's what scares me. Is that I think it feels like they didn't announce it because it's not priced correctly. Or they haven't. I mean, maybe they just haven't figured it out. But I feel like if they come out and they make this awesome announcement, and then they're like, "And it's only $999 or $999, you know, or whatever
for the Intel,
then everybody's gonna go and just like immediately shit on
it. No one will want to buy it for $1,000.
It'll be over. So
it needs to prove itself. You know, it needs to actually find. People need to realize that it is useful and not just a novelty.
So we will see. We will see. But I was interested, and I'm hoping it does well. You know, if it's the right price, I'll definitely be picking something up because I'm in the tablet market right now.
So. Indeed. Cool. So, Ash, tell us why sadness ensued for you.
Oh, okay, so my favorite PS3 game was Valkyria Chronicles. I don't play a whole lot of PS3 games. The ones I do have been pretty fun. But Valkyria Chronicles was a strategy game that came out for PS3, I want to say in 2008, 2009. And it was this really genius take on World War II and alternate history World War II, where magic exists. And it was just an amazing, just balls to the wall, well voice acted. Everything about it was perfect. And anyone who hasn't played Valkyria Chronicles for PS3, I think it's like $20 right now on Amazon. And you really, really owe it to yourself to buy it. If you like strategy games at all. And there's like a really heavy role-playing element as well. So it's not just like raw strategy.
Real quick, was this the game? You came over to our house once, and I think we were all playing board games or dominoes or something, and you were like, no thanks. And you sat on the couch with my dog, and you played something on PSP like all afternoon.
That was two, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was Valkyria Chronicles 2. That's actually a good segue.
super fan.
My love of board games. So Valkyria Chronicles unfortunately didn't sell very well here in the United States. It sold pretty well in Japan, but not enough to warrant a full sequel. So everyone was like, well, what the heck are they going to do? So they put out two on the PSP, which for a very long time was the number one selling console in Japan. So they're like, well, if we put out two on the PSP, it's going to sell fucking gangbusters in Japan. And it actually did sell very well. Has a great voice cast. I think friend of the podcast, Ali Hillis, is actually a voice in two. And, you know, two is actually a pretty sound PSP game. If you're going to get a PSP strategy game, I don't think you're going to find anything better. But it wasn't. It wasn't one. Okay, one had an amazing plot. It looked beautiful. It was all cel shaded. It looked like you were playing a cartoon. And of course, in the United States, Valkyria Chronicles 2 doesn't sell for shit because PSP games don't sell for shit in the United States.
Yeah.
So then they go ahead and they announce Valkyria Chronicles 3 for PSP. Everyone thought it was going to be for the PS3 again, but they said, no, it's going to be for PSP again. And it never gets localized, never comes here to the United States, and is Japanese only. Okay, so slowly, like, this franchise is just dying, and like the saddest part is, Sega just announced that the new iteration of the Valkyria Chronicles is actually be a card based game that's free to play. Free to play, that's web based. So it's going to be essentially a card based flash game set in the Valkyria Chronicles universe.
Huh.
With no announcement for a future title in the series. So, you know, to kind of, I mean, that's sort of like the end. It goes from like, you know, this great console experience to like handheld and then to web based card flash game. It's just kind of like getting kicked in the balls. Yeah. So very, very sad end to this franchise. And hopefully, you know, somewhere down the road when we're old men, somebody realizes that they have something truly awesome on their hands and kind of reboots it or something.
Maybe it'll just be like a group of five European like hardcore fans like just sit in their basement and do like a fan remake of the game. You know, like,
yeah,
this is what number four would have looked like. And we're going to put it out for free to everybody, you know.
Yeah, I mean, guys, I mean, it is so good. If you have a PS3, I'm telling you, you gotta play this.
It's this is amazing. Like a tactics kind of game, right? Is that what it is? Like,
yeah, I mean, you build up your squad. The thing about this is each one of your units has a very distinct personality, so you get to choose who goes with you into battle.
But is it like exactly Shining Force in that sense, or is it still a little different?
It's
different.
Similar. It's similar to Shining Force in that each unit has a certain number of move points, but the way it's executed is a little bit different. And I don't want to bore people to death by going into the mechanics of it, but it is it's unique. It's unique turn-based.
Cool.
So sad, but hopefully maybe we'll see something in the future.
Okay. Hey, do you guys like earning achievements?
I don't really care.
I like which is why I found a news story that I don't know if you guys are familiar with Xbox Live Rewards. It's like sort of like a tie-in to Xbox.com where you complete surveys and you basically just, by remaining a member, you earn free Microsoft points to redeem.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's really simple. It's like rewards.xbox.com. And for the most part, it's like you do a survey every month and you get like 20 Microsoft points. And then if you, say, renew your gold subscription for a year, you'll get like 200 or 400 points or something. And then every month they have specials. So if it's like last month, I think if you bought like a music download, like so something for Rock Band or for Dance Central, you know, that was 240 points, you'd get 80 points back. So it's not a lot in isolation, but like once you chip away at it, it really adds up. I think I've earned like 1400 points like over the course of a year being a member, which is, you know, a couple of Spectre packs, which is great. Yeah, so now they're thinking about tying in that system to an achievement system as well. I think, I don't know that the rewards will net you achievements. I think what they're going to do is they're going to start saying things like, if you earn this achievement, we'll give you Microsoft points. So it's almost like a way to cross promote games and challenge people to earn certain achievements and do stuff like that. And I think it's just kind of cool because, I mean, like a lot of people, I read a story every now and again about, you know, why Xbox Live Gold should not be paid. It should be free, you know. But I guess on the flip side, this is a way to give something back for doing something you already do. You know what I mean?
Hey, I'm all for it. Give me stuff for free. It's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, 20 points is 20 points. But, you know, after a couple months, that stuff adds up and you can buy a song or like a movie or downloadable track.
Or DLC or something. Why not?
Exactly. So
very cool.
Sort of related to that, recently Major Nelson posted release dates and prices for Summer of Arcade, and that is exciting to me because I know when Wrecketeer is coming out finally. Because
you love Wrecketeer.
Yeah, so if anybody was following us at PAX
East. Can we say that was Scott's Game of Show, PAX East 2012?
That was the Nerd Appropriate Game of Show, PAX East.
The Nerd Appropriate Game Show.
Yeah.
Oh, Wrecketeer. My God. It's so simple. It's like Angry Birds almost with a Kinect, but such a simple premise, and it's so much fun the way it's styled and designed. So this year's Summer of Arcade titles are Tony Hawk Pro Skater HD Remake. Apparently, they couldn't get all of the tracks from the originals, and I guess there was some hubbub about that. But so it's going to be starting with July 18th and every week after. It's going to be Tony Hawk, Wrecketeer, a game called Deadlight, another game called Hybrid, which I think is a MOBA, and then a game called Dust and Elysian Trail. And if you guys haven't looked at Dust...
Like the Dust came out last year, didn't it?
No, that was From Dust.
Oh, okay.
And this game is called Dust and Elysian Trail. And this game actually looks cool because it looks like it's all hand-drawn, all the art and everything. So
Curious
to see what that's all about. So that's your Summer of Arcade. All of the games are going to be 1,200 Microsoft points with the exception of Wrecketeer, which is going to be 800. Comes out July 25th. Super soaked.
Awesome.
Cool. I'm excited.
Yes, sir.
I'll probably get a bunch of those.
Hell yeah. They'll probably do a deal, too. If you buy like four, you get something back or something.
Usually that's how they do it, right? Or if you buy the first four, you'll get the last one for free or something. They always do like some deal where you get money back for buying them all.
Yeah. Definitely a good deal.
Yeah. I will totally play Tony Hawk again, by the way. I have no issue doing that endlessly.
Yeah. Is that going to be a mashup of one and two? I think. Let me see.
I don't know if it's one and two. I know it's definitely one. I don't know about two.
But I have a really
brief Tony Hawk story.
Yeah, go ahead.
I never played Tony Hawk until I worked at Halloween Horror Nights, and there was this break room that in between your shifts, you'd have 45 minutes on, 45 minutes off. So you'd go out and be scary for 45 minutes, and then you'd sit there as a monster, like in the break room, and everyone would just like eat snacks as monsters. And all we did was like play Tony Hawk the entire time.
Nice.
So I have a really vivid memory of like all these ghouls and goblins and like fucked up creepy people, like bleeding and stuff, playing Tony Hawk for hours on end. So it was positive memories.
Awesome.
That's incredible. And it looks pretty sharp. I just hope, I'm sure everybody knows that it needs to be faithful to the original. Yeah. And it's crazy because when you go and look at these screenshots, like all of those memories come back. You're like, I've seen that place. I remember doing that. Like I've been, you know, these levels we played forever.
And then like after the hyper realism, like, cause it's so funny that like Tony Hawk was original and awesome and everybody loved it. And the physics were just ridiculous and it was just incredible. And then Skate came out and you were like, this is so awesome. It's like hyper real skateboarding and you know, everything feels awesome and it's like good and fluid. And then I kind of got tired of that too. Like by Skate 3, I was like, all right, I don't really need to do this anymore.
Oh yeah, like the twin stick thing, like that kind of got messy after a while.
Yeah, so it'll be fun to go back and just play some ludicrous game again. So did you guys know that Amazon had its own studio that it was developing titles with?
I did know that it was starting to. I was aware of that. I think that's pretty cool.
So they have a project, I think it's a full-length movie under development called Zombies versus Gladiators, which they recently hired Clive Barker? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
To rewrite. So that's an actual project that's actually happening, and they've got a real horror writer creating the kind of backbone of the story for it. But the way Amazon's doing stuff is kind of unique. Like they're hiring talent like Netflix or like Hulu's doing for their own kind of studio, but they are also sort of crowdsourcing stories and allowing people to submit script ideas that they will respond to within, I think, like a month or month and a half, and then they'll option it from these writers for like 10 grand or something. They'll option people's script ideas that they have, which is cool. But they've picked up four titles that are going to be TV shows that they're now working on. And I don't know if they named them in this. This was in The Verge that I read it. There's one called The 100 Deaths of Mort Grimley, which is an animated show. And the premise is something about a man tries to kill himself, and then to actually be able to pull it off, he has to cause the 100 deaths of other people or something weird.
Okay.
There's Magic Monkey Billionaire. There's one called Doomsday, which is a mockumentary, and one called Buck Plaid Sheep. So
interesting.
I think it's interesting.
You got to start somewhere.
Well, here's my I have a counterpoint to that argument. I think it's interesting because maybe this model, what Amazon's doing, which is probably inexpensive for them relative to what a broadcast network pays to put a TV show on.
Sure.
Maybe this is the way to get these weird, like maybe Pushing Daisies would have lasted five seasons on a thing like Amazon as opposed to being on CBS and only pulling a million viewers instead of 15 million and getting canceled within a season.
Sure. I mean, how many of these are live action? Because it looks like two of them are animated.
Two of them are live action as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, like, we love a show like Pushing Daisies. I feel like that would cost more to make than some of the shows that they're... I mean, we haven't seen these shows, but, like, like this one's a comedy, and the other one, Bug Plaid Sheep, is preschool, so...
But I'm saying, like, what if this opens up... I mean, this is only the first four titles. What if this opens up the ability to kind of experiment more with television and start delivering a variety of kinds of television, you know, like that maybe aren't going to pull 15 million people a week to come watch their show.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there is something out there that, you know, maybe there's an audience out there that is waiting to be tapped. Yeah. Maybe there's an audience that's sick of watching reality TV, you know?
Thank Felicia Day and the Guild for, you know, basically opening the door for web television and being, you know, having original content that people will actually pay.
It's weird
to see, you know.
This doesn't feel like web television to me. It's the same with Netflix and Hulu. It's really weird to feel like now they almost feel like other networks. They feel like a Bravo kind of network, you know, or whatever, like some weird cable network.
It's awesome though. It's like, I don't know. I think I'm a lot like you guys. If the content is good, I'll bend over backwards for it. I mean, like, I just paid for HBO for the first time since I was a little kid.
Hey, let me sidetrack really quick. I have attempted to purchase HBO like five separate times now, and the cable company will not let the order complete on my account. So I can get HBO. Like, now they're just not letting me pay for things that I want to pay for. I'm like, I will willingly give you whatever crappy amount of money it is for HBO. Here, I tried it online, I tried it in person, and I've tried it on the TV channel twice, because you can go to the TV channel, just hit a button and order it. And all four times, it's like, well, I tried, but I didn't pull it off, sorry. And I'm like, what the hell?
So weird.
It's just really unfortunate that HBO is tied to cable, but I mean, we've talked about why that's that way, but it's such a bummer.
Such a bummer.
Oh, by the way, I watched the whole season of Girls in one sitting.
Did you like
it? It's pretty intense. Very, very well done.
I'm sure it's great. I don't know why I get so much shit every time I say that it's not something that I thought was aimed at me. I'm not saying it's a bad show. I'm sure it's awesome.
I don't think it's for, like, quote unquote dudes, like, you know, like, it's not for guys our age, but I think it's like, in terms of just the quality of the writing and the acting, I think it's a really well scripted series.
Yeah. I've heard that it's written just brilliantly and the acting's really good. And Melissa's boyfriend, Yorma Taconi, I hear is butt ass naked in it at some point too.
I don't know who that is.
He's
the guy from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
In Lonely Island.
Yes. That is Yorma Taconi. So I saw this announcement, Scott. I didn't really care because I barely play my 3DS at all. But
sure,
another version of the 3DS is coming out.
I mean, this is not
this
like
one apparently for giants.
Yes,
I mean this
I
is
really
not
like the 3DS. I just Me wish want. It were bigger.
so you don't accidentally eat it.
It crushes.
it's not really exciting news or surprising news, I guess, but so 3DS XL is going to release on August 19th. It's going to retail for $200.
Yeah.
Come with built-in memory in the top screen. I think probably both screens, but they said specifically the top screen is going to be something like 90% bigger. Okay. So here's my beef, right? I guess maybe I would be even more mad if they did do this, but there's no design changes to this machine. Specifically, there's not a second thumbstick, which is which is like what people want. You know what I mean? And of course, it would only.
Right? You're just like, please, just fucking put a stick there.
It's like you tease with the stick, right?
Hey, oh, hiya.
So, you know, obviously, like you buy this thing, and it doesn't have a second stick, but the stick attachment that you may have had for the original 3DS is obviously no longer compatible because it's a bigger machine.
Right.
And something else that's impossible to do is that they increase the screen size, but not the resolution. So really, like, what's the appeal here? It's like everything's, you can't increase the resolution of the screen because none of the previous games would really be compatible or whatever, you know, there'd be problems, compatibility problems. So
now when the DS went from the DS to it went DS Lite and then DS XL, right? They put an XL out of that one. Do you remember if there was spec changes in that one?
It was the same. I mean, same problem.
Same thing.
At the time that came out, I looked at that system and I saw the demo of the game and I was like, these games look like shit now because it's not running in the right size. You know what I mean? It's like if you take your old point and click PC games from, you know, 1990 and you try to run them now on your 23-inch display, they kind of look like shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the same problem that happens here. And especially for a system that, you know, has 3D capability built into it. I don't know why you'd want it to look worse, shitty. I suppose. Yeah.
Well, so here's the real question then for the smart gamer. Does that mean the regular 3DS is going to go down in price?
I mean, I hope so. I mean, like, I guess I don't really care at this point, but
yeah,
you know, they already brought it down from $250 to $169. This machine is going to be $30 more. I just don't know, man. Yeah.
It'd be awesome though if they lowered that down to like $140 or $130. I mean, it's an easy purchase at that point.
It'd be a killer. That's true. You know, the other thing, I don't even know what the appeal of the system is, because some of the things that were cool about the current system, like the ability to buy a second thumbstick and the charging cradle that came with the 3DS, this one's not going to come with a charging cradle.
Yeah.
So you plug it in like normal. I don't know. I thought that was a cool sort of design choice to make a cradle, because now I can just grab my machine, play it, and then just throw it back on the cradle when I'm done. And I always thought that was really neat. And now they took that away too. So I don't really understand what this is all about. So I guess if you have...
It's kind of
big
a bummer.
Hands. Yeah, this is the machine for you. But otherwise,
it's
I don't.
For
really
Andre
know
the Giant and his family.
Rest in peace,
Andre's family.
They just want to sell more. I think it's probably just for the sake of like a re-release, essentially.
Yeah, and in 3 months they're gonna have Bubblegum Pink 3XL, and then like they're gonna have Aqua Blue fucking XL.
There'll be a light version
bundled with.
There'll be a light version. The problem with this, and I know they, I mean, like Xbox did it, you know, they redesigned their Xbox. I'm surprised that the Wii was never like fundamentally redesigned. And
well,
it
didn't they do the black one though?
They did. I mean, but that's just a color.
Yeah. Right?
But it makes me worried.
I mean, the Xbox also included the wireless as well and had a nice hunky hard drive installed. So it was, I mean, you know, they redesigned it and actually made it better.
That was an upgrade,
As opposed to, we just gave you a new Xbox that's a lot bigger.
But it makes me worried about being an early adopter for the Wii U. You know what I mean? Like, if I do get that itch and it does come out, who's to say that, like, after Christmas, they're not just going to go, oh, you know, we found a way to make this thing smaller and now it levitates in your living room. I'd be like, what the fuck, guys? Come on.
Yeah.
I wanted the levitating one.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Transformers.
So I put this in here mainly because I have been blissfully unaware that this was even happening, but Michael Bay is doing a Transformers 4. Did you guys know that?
I did. I heard he was making it, yeah.
I don't even know what to say to that.
So here's the deal, though. No original cast. None of them. No one's coming back from the first three. And he's saying that the majority of it, but not the entirety of the movie, due to budget reasons, is going to be set in space / Cybertron. He said that he would love to do a Cybertron story, but that this movie has to be shot for $30 million less than 3 was shot for, so that doing the entire thing in space is impossible to him. But he's going to do as much of it as he can in space, I guess.
Well, you know what? That's fine, because fucking Transformers isn't a movie about the military or people. It's a movie about robots.
Yeah, so maybe this will be maybe he's going to listen to his audience and actually do some stuff. But the Slash Film article points out that he did explicitly state that this is not a reboot. It is more movie following 3, so it's going to follow the quote unquote storyline from 1, 2, and 3.
I mean, if it's going to take place on Cybertron, shouldn't it be more like a prequel or something? Like I thought the planet was destroyed. Or
I thought so
like
too.
Back to Cybertron.
Yeah, I thought so too. But
the Cube of Destiny needs to be placed back in the Samoflange microadjuster.
You know what's sad is that we're all still going to probably see this movie, right?
Oh, that's the problem. Yeah, you have to.
he could literally just shit Transformers out of his ass, and we will still be like, oh, fuck, I'll go see it. It's fine.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, for the same reason I'll go see all the G.I. Joe movies that come out.
Oh,
yeah.
They delayed it, too. And that one actually looked like a G.I. Joe movie to me. It finally looked like, not finally, because they only did one others before this, but it looked like they were just like, let's just be stupid and crazy and have, you know, laser guns and ridiculousness happening. And then they canceled it.
I don't think they really knew what they wanted to do with that film. But
yeah,
how about a Transformers G.I. Joe crossover movie?
Oh man,
that'd be awesome.
I mean, I think that would be
into it,
right in the pocket. I mean, that could be totally cheesy, and I think people would love it.
Channing Tatum and Truck Balls. Is that who's in G.I. Joe? It's Channing Tatum.
Truck Balls.
I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, Channing Tatum is in G.I. Joe.
Yeah. So,
which is why I heard G.I. Joe 2 is delayed, because they wanted more scenes with him because he is a rising star.
Because he's big now, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Especially after that stripper film. They should have put it out before the stripper film so that when his career tanks after that, they could still get some.
I don't know. I've been hearing some good stuff about Magic Mike.
Oh, God.
Come on. All right. So talking about...
One of my friends posted on Facebook, is it out? I guess he saw them. It's out, right?
I saw a movie poster for it. Yeah.
He said something along the lines of, just saw Magic Mike. Must warn you, this is not a documentary about the DJ. I was like, oh, sorry. That sucks. But his joke was funnier than whatever I just said. Anyway.
Not to totally get derailed real quick, but speaking of movies and posters, did you know they're remaking Judge Dredd?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, with what's his name from Doom?
The Rock?
Carl Urban?
Yeah, Carl Urban.
Carl Urban from Doom.
He is Judge Dredd.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
And it actually looks like, did you not see the trailer? You guys didn't see the trailer yet?
No, I haven't seen the trailer.
There is a trailer out, and it looks the right kind of cheesy. Like, it looks
cool,
entertaining cheesy.
Like, that was Stallone, right, originally?
It was Stallone.
The first one was pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
Wasn't it? Yeah, it was Stallone. Ugh.
This one is like all
taking
the buildings or something. It looks good. I don't know.
Do you ever think there should be a remake of Demolition Man, or is that just like a classic film as it is? Should it just remain?
It's a classic.
I just want to make sure we agree on that.
Bizarro.
Well, 90s. I'm not super happy they're remaking Total Recall, and I've seen nothing of that movie yet that makes me feel like, oh, I'm so glad they're remaking Total Recall.
Yes.
I gotta pause really quick. You have to cover the fact that that's underwear. It's making me crack up every time I look at it.
Look, just because I'm using underpants as my pop filter.
They're
silky smooth.
I really feel like you're doing like a sound engineering experiment between like socks and underwear.
Maybe next time. I was like desperately looking around.
Yeah.
Your hands started.
The only other choice. Like the only other choice is a denim hat with a flower on it from 1987.
Yeah.
It's the only other choice.
Maybe next time you can try denim and then like silk underwear, or you could try like a bra, just put like a cup over the microphone and see how that goes.
I don't think you want to zero on this microphone.
That's all right.
Anyway, sorry. I didn't mean to.
Oh boy.
So, Ash, did you figure out what your Tuesday is going to be like? Are you going to be able to do this or not?
Oh, so yeah. So I went out today and actually
bought another copy. Oh my!
I did. I bought another copy.
Good lord!
But
you didn't bring Mass Effect with you or what?
So I brought three with me, but
okay.
I only brought disc two. And then like they announced extended cut, and I was like, "Fuck, what do I do?" But the good news is Christina is playing through two now, and was going to start three while we're up here. So I just bought three. So a little early,
okay.
But.
Fair enough.
That's my logic, at least. That's what I'm telling myself.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do. You can't miss this, you know?
Yeah, for real. I didn't think it was going to come out early. Kind of came as a surprise.
Dude, are you guys surprised that it's getting put out so quickly?
I'm surprised that the lead was like a five-day lead. It was like announced on what, like Friday? Coming out on Tuesday? Like there's not even time to be excited. It'll already be here, you know?
Is this all, it's all cutscenes, right? There's no gameplay here.
Well, I think the surprising thing about this is that you don't just like load up your save file before you pick a color. Like the save file, like the extended cut goes as far back as before the attack on the Cerberus base.
Yeah.
Really?
And it's
as far as
2 gigabytes in size. So there's quite a good deal of content, you know, and we don't know exactly what that is yet, of course, but like Scott says, I mean, it starts before the Cerberus base. So you're going to have that whole
sequence
with Kai Lang.
End?
Yes, you do. You get to replay your ending.
I'm a little concerned about replaying the last battle.
Yeah.
Because that was really difficult. Brutal. Yeah.
Huh. Well, if you already you played it on insane, right, Scott?
I guess I could just turn it down, right?
I'm saying you already got your achievement. You don't need to. Don't need to kill yourself. That last fight is a bitch, though.
It's brutal. You know what? I'm regular though, on hard or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm betting we're a lot better at the game now after probably the hundreds of hours we put into multiplayer.
We were talking about this.
Pretty fucking good.
We talked about this on Friday because I don't know about you, but I haven't gone back into single player since playing multiplayer. So I'm really curious to see what it's going to be like to go back into single player, knowing everything we know about all the weapons, about all the abilities, like the way combos go together and stuff like that.
It's a different sort of ball game.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited.
Gonna know exactly how to take a Banshee down, exactly how to deal with Cerberus as opposed to, the Geth or what have you. So, should be interesting. But yeah, so extended cut drops Tuesday the 26th. I'm to be honest, since I am a fan of BioWare, I'm nervous for these guys. I really, really keep my fingers crossed that they knock it out of the park. I know they poured everything they had into this and it's completely free. So thank multiplayer for allowing them to do that, because without that cash flowing in from those multiplayer packs, they never would have been able to pay everybody to work on this content for months.
Yeah.
This is kind of like a milestone in gaming, because I don't think anyone has ever done this before, adding something on to the game.
That's a way to put it. A milestone or... I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I want to see how they pulled it off, because I really want it to be everything that it could, and will at that point be like, I'm trying to not sound like an asshole, like be right in the assumption that they should have gone back and done something and not just be giving into the loud masses to, redo something for the sake of.
Right.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I think that after this comes out, there will still be people that will be mad, and those people will never be able to be appeased.
You're absolutely right.
But I'm with Ash. I really hope that I don't think they're going to cave, some might fear, but at the same time, I really hope that they can sort of win the hearts back of those people that are on the fence. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with Ash too. I'm not, we're all with Ash here.
Yes. Yay. We are all together.
No, but
we are holding our own line.
Yeah, yeah. So I definitely want it to be, I know it's gonna be good. I know these guys have put a lot of work into it and it's gonna be good. I just want it to be good in the way that is true to itself and not necessarily good in the way that it's we made more story to quiet everybody down.
I mean, how about this? How about not to detract from what it's going to be, but I almost feel like I would like to be able to play all of this content and then maybe in the end not really know exactly what was added. You know what I'm saying? I will know that there is more stuff, but I would like to be able to play through it and feel like all that stuff was always there, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Not shoehorned in, but just integrated tightly.
Right.
And I feel like that is what it's going to be. And it's going to be, it's not like, I played through the game one time. I only had one character. It's not like I poured over the details of the ending like some of the videos on the internet did. So I'm really just excited to see more Mass Effect. I said I would play a kart racing game. I don't give a shit,
I'm excited. I'm excited because I played through that end so fast that being able to go back and just kind of enjoy myself, because I did the entire thing in I think four days.
You're trying to outrun the
3 or 4 days. Yeah. So it'll be good just to go back and play that. But yeah, I'm excited. So
we'll see. We'll have to reconvene next week and we can have a big extended cut discussion.
You know what, guys? I've got an idea. Let's get together next week and talk.
Oh my gosh.
About this.
We should start a podcast.
I mean, we all like video games, so I really think we have something going here. We could really just
call it straight talk. Is that a bad idea? Straight talk. Yeah. Matt Scott and Ash and Hillary.
It looks better when you lean back in your chair and you're just relaxing with underwear in your face.
Yeah, like that. smells like a dream.
I can't get it out of my head. I don't know why.
My underpants are hypnotizing you.
They are.
Look into the underpants.
No.
Okay. We will be right back with some reviews, including Summer Game Pile picks of The Gunstringer and Syndicate. Matt's going to talk about Kindle Fire Besiege 2. Scott is going to talk about the new Pixar film Brave. And I'm going to talk about the new animated feature Dragon Age Dawn of the Seeker.
Guys, we're back.
Hey.
We're gonna do some Summer Game Pile.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really liking this segment because it gives me an excuse to talk about things that are old that I've been playing over the summer. That's the logic behind Summer Game Pile. Hooray! You know what though? Let me tell you, because we had Anna on the podcast for the wife swap, and I think that was the month I played Majin in Forsaken Kingdom, and she told me that she'd seen that game before and wanted to play it, and now she will. So I really feel like this Summer Game Pile, if I can even reach one person with this segment, it's going to be successful.
Just that one person. It's all
you
need.
Just that one person, you guys.
It's all we need.
Starts with one. You got to start somewhere. So the Gunstringer. For anybody that is unaware about the Gunstringer, the real lore here for me is that there was a time where they were selling the Kinect, and you would buy the Kinect, and you would get download codes for both the Gunstringer and Fruit Ninja. Well, as is custom on the internet, people just took those download codes and put them on eBay. So I think I got Gunstringer for like $7.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool. So it's like, hell yeah, I'll give this game a try. I played the demo. So the Gunstringer.
Like how you became an Italian too. Hell yeah, I'll give this game a try. I played the demo.
Yeah. And I was like, get out of the face. Right. So the Gunstringer. It's a Kinect-based shooter with some pretty innovative interesting controls, and a good sense of humor.
A little innovative, I think.
Yeah, kind of reminds me. The humor reminds me a little bit of Double Fine humor.
Well, it's oh Jesus, I just forgot their name. Explosion Man, Comic Jumper,
the Maw Invasion, right?
The Maw, yeah.
Twisted Pixel.
There you go. So good pedigree. Definitely a game worth checking out. So, the Gunstringer is a shooter, like I said. The controls are interesting because you're the main character is sort of like this marionette puppet, and you control him by moving one hand around, and then you attack the enemies by, they tell you that you hold your hand like a finger, you know, finger gun. You do like the old finger bang move.
let's talk about this finger bang move for a minute here, Scott, because I think you need to teach me.
You guys remember South Park?
I don't remember the finger bang move.
South Park. It's like finger banging is when you make your hand look like a gun and you go bang, bang, bang. And that's what
finger banging.
Yeah, okay. Right. That's finger banging.
So, yeah, that's how you kill enemies in the Gunstringer. Okay. Anyways.
Death by finger banging.
So there's a lot of good humor in this game. The game is divided up into sort of like a series of acts. Each act,
yes,
I think, is four levels plus a boss encounter. The humor is really cool. Like the dimensions does a lot of like camera work and shifting. It utilizes like some different kind of mechanics. So the whole game isn't just running and gunning. Sometimes you're punching guys, grappling, stuff like that. It's mostly an on-rails shooter.
Yeah.
And sort of the main goal of the game is score attack, which I'm not super stoked about, but the story of the game is compelling enough to make me want to keep playing. And it actually does a little bit of, it's sort of told as a Wild Western revenge story. So you're this Gunstringer, you were done wrong by your posse, you were killed, you came back to life, and you're sort of this, what is that art style? Like the Day of the Dead.
Yeah, it's the...
Yeah. Mexican folklore, Day of the Dead art style, like Grim Fandango style.
The skulls and all of that.
Yeah. So that's what your character looks like.
Muertos.
Yes, sir. So you basically just run around and you slaughter everything in your path, and it's a ton of fun. And I think you can even do two-player multiplayer.
Cool.
Matt, you said you played this game too. What did you think about the game and the controls and Kinect functionality?
I totally agree with everything except for the controls part, so game's totally fun. I don't know where my brain went there for a second. The game's totally fun, and the story is great. The art style is awesome. I love Twisted Pixel. I played Comic Jumper. I played Splosion Man. So I'm already a fan of that kind of brand, if you will. But you have this, you specifically, Scott, have this weird Jedi sense with the Kinect that I don't know anyone else who has this.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And
yeah.
It was really difficult for me, like super difficult. My timing was always off, and they do some time-based stuff where you have to like do certain things like during a couple of the boss fights.
Yeah.
And and I just was not good. I honestly just wasn't good at the game to the point where it was hard for me to keep playing because I was getting not totally frustrated, just not able to progress like I needed to in a smooth fashion, if that makes sense.
Right. I mean, like you were almost like the Kinect sort of almost got in the way of your experience. So it's not that the game was too challenging. It's just that you, like, even getting through the game felt like a chore at that point because of the weird like control layout.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know that it's necessarily Twisted Pixel's fault. I might just be really shitty with the Kinect. I have no idea. I've tried 3 or 4 different Kinect games now, and I've been pretty horrible with all of them. So,
well, I did perceive one interesting problem as far as like the feel of the game goes with, and I'm talking about the controls. So in this game, you're supposed to be in one hand holding a puppet, marionette controls for a puppet, and then the other hand is supposed to be a gun. Well, the problem is that when you shoot a gun, you kind of like hold it at your side, I guess is what you're supposed to do, and you can kind of aim in a very short, you know, range of motion to aim and shoot at something.
Yeah.
But that's really not what the game needs you to do. The game needs you to sort of move your hand over like the width of your TV to target these things, and I think that's kind of where the disconnect is.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. There's it requires a like a large, wide range of emotion.
Yeah,
it requires a wide range of emotion, guys. Like happy and sad. Yeah. Sometimes I had to get really depressed just to get through the game, and then it just made me bummed. It just bummed me out. I just couldn't get through it.
Kinect was that empathetic.
Yeah. sorry.
You would almost be better off playing like functionally playing the game the same way you would play Child of Eden, where you're actually not
right.
Making a gun with your hand, but you're sort of waving your hand over the screen to select the targets.
Which I was also horrible at.
The Child of Eden? You didn't like that one either?
Yeah.
I'm just not good at it. I like, for whatever reason, the Kinect and me do not necessarily get along yet. And you've even talked about it, how your brain processes how the Kinect processes you. Like, you get it. So you're like, when you move, you're doing it because you know that's how the Kinect's going to read it. And when I'm doing it, I'm reacting to my TV, and that the Kinect doesn't give a fuck about what my TV's doing.
Well, the other problem is that I did notice a problem with the game that I'm having, and that's that my Kinect sensor is mounted on top of my television.
Mine
right?
is too.
It sort of angles downward.
Yes.
So this is the same problem that the Nintendo Wii had, even with their Wiimote shooter style games, is that you're always sort of angling your hand, in this case, you're always angling it sort of towards the Kinect sensor and not necessarily always to where the object is on the TV,
right.
If that makes sense. Because
right.
The Kinect is not tracking your movement from the center of the TV. It's tracking your movement from the top of the TV. So when you're holding your arm sort of at a 90-degree position, at least for my TV, this is the problem. When you're holding your arm at that position, you expect to be in the middle of the screen. But for me, I think I was sort of like somewhere else, too high, too low. And that's sort of what breaks that natural feeling with these controls at some times.
Yeah, I don't think the Kinect is designed for the precision of a shooter, though. I mean, I don't think it's
ready
for that
yet. Well,
this
isn't a shooter per se. Like, it is Child of Eden, like where you kind of like
it's on rails.
Yeah, it's on rails, and you're going over targets with your hand. You're not like it's not like pew and like super direct at a single target with your hand. Like you're kind of like motioning over to get targets, and then you fire your gun.
Exactly. Oh, okay. Like Child of Eden. I think in Child of Eden, you push your hand forward, and in this game, you pull your hand up like you're firing. Again.
Yeah, so it's fun. I just like for me, it was frustrating. It was hard to get through. I did get this and Fruit Kinect or Fruit. Ninja. With my Kinect. So
yeah, I mean,
I got it for free.
My concerns about the controls, like I feel like I'm being very nitpicky. So I don't want that discussion of the controls to turn somebody off from at least trying the demo.
Yeah, yeah.
Because overall, it's a very polished experience with like good humor, and I think the right sort of like length for a game like this, like in the levels and stuff like that. And I mean, the only other drawback for me is that it's score attack. So if that's not your thing, that might be a turn off too. But I definitely recommend the Gunstringer to anybody looking for a Kinect experience if you're sort of lacking in that area.
100%. I totally agree. It just was hard. It was hard for me to connect with it.
Hey. That's excellent. I think we'll just stop that review right there on your pun. Ash, do you want to tell us about the Syndicate?
Yeah, sure. So Syndicate, when I was a wee lad, there was a PC real-time strategy game called Syndicate that was made by a company called Bullfrog that's not around anymore. And it was awesome. It was all about rival gangs in the future where like corporations control everything and kind of like espionage and blowing each other up. And it was cool. It was like, you know, kind of point and click, real-time strategy. You control a team of like these super cyborgs to like take out targets and stuff like that. And so that game kind of disappeared. And like, you know, that was in the 90s when that came out and nothing, you know, now it's 2012 and we're finally getting another Syndicate. So most people didn't even really realize that it was sort of a reboot of the franchise, so to speak, since like most of the events from the real-time strategy really aren't addressed in this. So Syndicate in my summer game pile is a first-person shooter. It's from Starbreeze Studios, who did the Riddick games, which were all reviewed very well, and they're really good at what they do. And, you know, surprisingly enough, I really am enjoying Syndicate. I'm at the very end of the single-player campaign, and I hear multiplayer is even better than single-player. But it's very, very polished. The shooting mechanics are great. The weapons all feel great. I have no qualms with that at all.
I heard this campaign was a little short. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I'm near the end. I'm about hour 6. So I don't feel like it's going to be a very long campaign. And, you know, there are a couple set pieces that really stand out. But for the most part, it's pretty cut and dry. You know, you just kind of go through the motions, kill a lot of guys, move on to the next area. I mean, there definitely is a plot. There's characters. One of the characters is played by Rosario Dawson, and she does a really good job. And like I said, you know, the thing that really separates Syndicate from all other first-person shooters is the fact that you are this cyborg, right? And if you ever wanted to play a game as the Terminator, this is probably the game for you because your character is pretty much, even from the very beginning, pretty close to unstoppable. You can run through certain walls. You can like, you know, near the end of Deus Ex.
Yeah. The problem is that this game, I think, came out around the same time as Deus Ex.
Yeah.
And I was really confused because I was like, these two games seem very similar on the surface. So maybe talk about where these two games diverge, I suppose, because I mean, obviously there's a co-op campaign too. Or do they not diverge?
Well, that's interesting because I was talking with Derek about this today. And to be honest, I almost feel as though these games could coexist within the same universe. They feel very similar. The tone is very similar. The way the characters look. I mean, there's even a character that's like, you know, your buddy / nemesis in the campaign in Syndicate that looks remarkably like Adam Jensen, like to the point where you're like, is that Adam Jensen? And, you know, like I said, the game looks beautiful. So it is of the pedigree of Deus Ex. To add a little bit more fuel to that fire, they hired the exact same composer as Deus Ex. They basically said, oh, we love the soundtrack to Deus Ex. Let's get that guy. And so it sounds a lot like Deus Ex. So it almost feels like, in a sense, you know, a shooter variant of Deus Ex. And even some of the abilities are very similar, you know, ability to fall from great distances and like punch through walls, stuff like that you can do in this as well. You know, not as many role-playing features in Syndicate as Deus Ex. And probably the coolest thing is you can control microchips. So let's say there's an enemy in front of you, and in the future, everybody has a chip in their brain, same as Deus Ex. You know, everyone's chipped.
Yep.
And so in Syndicate, you can actually control the chips of other people because you're an agent. You're basically like the super being, right? And so you can control people's chips to malfunction. You can tell them to kill themselves, to commit suicide. You can command them to like turn on their enemies. You can like, if you see like a flying drone.
Can you control trains and traffic lights as well?
You can control machinery, doors and things like that. So
there you go.
You can control elevators and all sorts of stuff. So there's a lot of that in this.
Excellent.
Right now, Deus Ex, shit, I just did it.
Syndicate. Ayo, Watch Dogs, whatever.
Syndicate is published by EA, made by Starbreeze. It's only $30 new right now. It didn't sell very well for a number of reasons, mainly because it was released at a weird time. It wasn't marketed all that well, to be perfectly honest. And I think like in its first week of release in the United States, it only sold like 35,000 copies. Like it did pretty poorly. So, but anyway, I definitely recommend it. You know, if you're looking for a new shitter, that has a lot of glitz, feels great, maybe something different. It's definitely worth $30, so check it out.
Cool. Awesome.
I really want to hear, like, if you get into it, I want to hear what this co-op campaign is like, because for me, the major turnoff was I heard the campaign was like 6 hours long, and then at that point I kind of checked out, but then I heard there was co-op, so maybe that makes up a
difference. Next week. I'll probably finish up the single player this evening, and then I'll move on to the co-op and see what we got.
Good times if you're not playing Gears of War. Heyo.
I forgot my disc.
Oh, you forgot your... Yeah, that's going to have to wait.
I may have to go buy a fifth copy of that game.
Yeah, I was going to say, how many did you buy that one?
I don't want to talk about it.
We almost got a full squad, man. We're ready to go.
Ash is a full squad on his own. He just needs the Xboxes.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, Jesus.
All right.
So Matt, you played a game on your Kindle called Besieged 2.
Yes, and this is available for... Android and iOS, and it's on the Kindle market, which is awesome because the Kindle market actually isn't Google Play market. So, this is a tower defense game, but it has some kind of RPG elements mixed in, which is a little weird. Makes gameplay a little different, but I do have one significant bummer to add to this before we get too far into the review. It is a freemium title.
Freemium,
which means it's totally free to download and you can play it for free for a little while, and then eventually you're not really going to be able to play it anymore because you have to pay money to get any further in the game. So this is not like many of the other freemium titles that I've played. This isn't the robot battle one, Robotech, I think it was called, or Robotica, even the one that I played the crap out of, which was Triple Town, which you could play, you know, for quite a while for free, really, and still really enjoy the game. This one, you start off and you've got a castle, and you've got basic archers, and then skeletons kind of march towards your castle. So it's not a top-down tower defense. It's kind of like side-scrolling. You see it from the side.
Oh, right. Okay.
The art's really awesome.
Yeah, the art looks great.
Yeah, the art's great. It moves really fluid. Everything works really well in the game. Problem is to upgrade... First thing they do that's annoying is they make everything time-based. So, like, let's say I earn enough gold and I've got some building blocks to make a new upgrade, which will give me a new weapon. So I build the building to get that upgrade, and then they'll be like, okay, that'll be done in 45 minutes.
Oh, like real time, actual time.
And you're like...
That's like EVE Online. EVE Online does that.
And you're like, well, yeah, but EVE Online, you're paying to play. So they're delaying your game, right? EVE Online's a pay-to-play, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Like...
Used to be.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like back in the old days, it was pay to play. So the reason Eve's doing that is because if they can make you wait for it, same reason WoW does things like that. If you have to wait 15 minutes for something to complete, well, then you're dragging your time out. You're going to play the game longer, essentially, in essence, over time. This has no reason to drag my play time out. There's zero reason for it. But what they do is they say, this building will be done in 45 minutes, or you can use a diamond and it'll be complete right now. How do you get diamonds? You buy them for $5 for a set of diamonds or whatever. It just...
Sneaky, sneaky.
What annoys me about it is that I have no problem with freemium, and I happily pay for things when I play freemium games. Triple Town, I paid for a bunch of stuff in Triple Town because I love the game so much. The Robo game, I actually paid at some point because I really love the game. This game blocks me within 15 minutes of starting the game to get any...
In its tower defense.
In its tower defense. So it's like... I can't upgrade. So now I'm just dying a lot, and I'm like not having fun. I'm now not enjoying the game, and then I'm like, oh, I made enough money. I can upgrade something. So I go to upgrade it, and then it's like, okay, you'll be done in an hour. And I'm like, well, what? So I'm not playing your game. Now I just stopped playing for an hour because I have no reason to play.
They're basically saying that our tower defense game is so awesome that you're going to want to pay money for this tower defense game, not the other 100 tower defense games, but this one.
Yeah. My problem with it is like, either charge me for it up front. If your game is that awesome, that's fine. Charge me $1.99 or whatever. I will buy it. It's not an issue. Like, I understand that not everybody does, but a lot of people do, especially on iOS. When I saw this was on iOS and Android, people buy stuff for $1 or $2 without any qualms, you know? Or if you want to do freemium and you want me to pay for upgrades, let me get into the game. At least let me get going and then be like, oh man, I love this so much, I want to spend $1.99 to get gold coins so I can do this or so that I can upgrade my stuff faster. Like, it's not an issue paying for it, but besides all that, if you can get past that or if you're willing to get into the game, it is pretty fun. It is easy to play. The graphics do look really good. It is a slight twist on tower defense, the way you can kind of upgrade, but to be dead honest with you, I don't totally know because I can't get through the upgrades. I've been playing for about 4 days maybe, and not for very long each time because I get blocked halfway through playing by trying to upgrade or something. So
sounds kind of annoying.
It is pretty annoying. It's unfortunate because it does look good otherwise, and
it's a bummer that's the model, you know. Right now
I kind of wanted to talk about it because it was like, this is a really common model for freemium. This is the way a lot of games are going, and it just feels really shitty. And I didn't know how you guys feel about this stuff, but to me, it's like, it just seems broken. I don't know if you guys agree or not, but
I agree. Yes. I think there is a right way and a wrong way to do it. You know, I love the way that Hero Academy does it, that you can buy content if you choose to use that content. Otherwise, the game is completely functional without that content. So
agreed.
I like that kind of model for microtransactions. I don't like the pay to keep playing. That's ridiculous to me. I would never do it. No matter how good it was.
Or pay to play faster. Like, what I don't get is, like, why, you know, that whole construct of, like, it's going to take you 45 minutes to get this upgrade, or you could pay us a dollar and get it right away, to me, which I don't know if it's a dollar, I'm just throwing a number out there. But, like, to me, it's like, you're just blocking, I'm just not going to play your game. You know, like, who is that winning over? Like, who's so addicted within 5 minutes of turning your game on that they like have to get the upgrade right away?
Yeah, agreed.
So I don't know.
It's a good question.
It's unfortunate. Hopefully, I don't know why it's Besieged 2. There was a Besieged Flash game that was out years ago that I used to play on like Kongregate. I don't know if they bought that, like if that was licensed or something, and they bought it and made a second one. There is no Besieged 1 on iOS or Android.
Interesting. So,
maybe there's one on iOS. I looked, I didn't see it, so I don't know. But yeah. So if you want to at least try out maybe 15 minutes of a new tower defense game, you can pull down Besieged 2. It did just come out about a week ago, I think, and it's decent. Art's cool. So, but that freemium model is slightly broken. So that,
yeah, what a bummer.
Yeah, it's really a bummer because I want games on my Kindle Fire. Like fun little kind of noodly games to just play for a little bit, and I was hoping this could be it, but apparently it will not.
Yeah.
So Scott, I am super interested in this movie, and you have to remain totally spoiler free.
Yeah, yes. I will.
I think I'm going tomorrow. So.
Even to the fact that I have heard that there's a big Pixar like change halfway through the movie where the story kind of takes a different direction. And I don't want to know what it is, if that's true. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess all I will say then is that the movie was good, and I think it holds up. I think it holds up to the standard of Pixar quality that you expect from those movies. You know,
Is it in your top three Pixar films?
Yeah,
that's a good question.
Well,
how do you rate your Pixar films?
Well, I know my number one is always going to be The Incredibles because of the retro thing. I'm a sucker for that.
And I love Incredibles.
It's a spy movie. It's got like retro vibe. Like, will always be number one. Let's see. I got to think about these Pixar films for a second.
I always love this question, Ash. I'm glad you asked it because I feel like there really is no wrong answer. Like,
oh my God. I'm reminding myself of other movies now that I've...
My number one's Monsters, Inc. Like, love it.
Yeah.
Monsters, Inc. was one of my favorite movies, period, let alone Pixar movies. But Monsters, Inc. is definitely my number one.
Man, oh God. Yeah.
Incredibles is in the list, but Toy Story series in general, especially 3, which made me cry like a baby.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, just because of my interests, I would put WALL-E in there in the top three.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I mean, for like maybe my third position, it'd probably be a toss up between Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo, like for sure.
Yeah.
That's a close. Yeah.
So top five.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I didn't even think about where to put Brave in this. Like maybe I would put it in there somewhere. Like it would be hard to bump any of those movies because like all these movies we're talking about are great movies, you know?
Cool. Well, I'm glad you liked it and it wasn't a stinker.
I mean, it wasn't
super heavy handed. Sometimes Pixar can be a little bit like, now you're going to fucking cry. Did they do that to you? Did they kill her dog? Does that cool bear get its like fucking head cut off by like a rampant bat and a bit of savages or something?
Well, I think.
Damn it, Scott.
I think what Pixar does really well is that they have this way of using animation, but still being so good at storytelling that you're like drawn into these characters, and you sort of feel and care about these characters in a way that like. Not even in live action films do you care about the real people that are on the screen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like you come to like, they basically have created a world from scratch, and I've heard this movie being described as sort of like a new fairy tale. And it's like Pixar built a new fairy tale from the bottom up. And it's, I think to me that was something that was very impressive about the movie. So obviously we're not going to talk about the plot or any of the plot points at all, because I'm not going to do any spoilers, but obviously, another reason that I'm sure probably most of us go to see Pixar films, at least I know the three of us probably do this, is that we want to see like what they're doing in animation. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like for me, there was something that I had like this moment where I was watching and the girl was talking to her mom, and they're, you know, like they're like royalty, right? So the mom is wearing like a dress and she's sitting at a table and she's bending over and she's talking. And the thing that like got at me was that as she was bending over to talk, you could see like the bottom of her dress would fold as she was talking. And I think in any other animated film, the character would just bend like they were a gummy bear, you know, their clothing would be part of their model. You know what I'm saying? So when they would bend over, the clothes would not move. But like, if you actually watch people's clothing, like in this movie, it's such a stupid thing, but it's like, you know, Pixar, you look at things like hair, textures of like fabric and wood, like her hair, she's got like this like big red curly hair, like all of that stuff is incredible. So I mean, to the extent that like, you know, at sometimes you will be engrossed in the story, and at other times you'll, you know, if you're lucky enough to pick out those details to like even just like look at them for a second, you're just like, holy shit, this looks amazing. You know what I mean?
Was the short
was called La Luna.
Good.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't know what you wanted me to say about it. But
no, like, I mean that you spoiling shorts really isn't a big deal to me. I just didn't know if it was a. I don't know.
Sometimes spoiling your shorts can be a very big deal.
No, I mean I always, you know, try to have extra shorts around.
It depends on where you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's true. I mean,
if you're at home, just get up, walk to the bathroom.
Yeah,
it's true.
Scoop it up, diesel back down.
Yeah.
Is it because, you know, they've got like the ones about the birds where it was like really goofy, cartoony, and then they have like really serious ones sometimes, like what was it, the chess with the old man? And
oh, I think this one maybe fit the vibe of the, you know, the actual feature, in that like it was sort of endearing. You know what I mean? There's like a little bit of comedy, but it's kind of like, I don't know, like Pixar is really good at telling stories about relationships between people and specifically family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that as far as the short goes, it was really good as well.
Cool.
That's my awesome.
If I could, I wish I had something here to make the noise. I was actually going to grab something, but people at the theater, man, let me tell you, like,
they're horrible.
I know, I think, yeah, horrible. I think psychologically I know why this happens, but people always wait until nothing is happening in a film to like open up a bag of like something they brought from home that is like the loudest fucking thing you've ever heard. Like, I think somebody had like one of those like heavy duty, like almost like aluminum foil, like bags of something in the seat behind me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they always think like, oh, well, if I open it very slowly, it'll be totally cool and nobody will notice that I've spent the last like 30 seconds trying to like crinkle this bag apart in like a very discreet kind of way. Yeah. Oh my God. It just makes me, yes. It makes me insane. So it's like people, this is the problem with the film is like people are drawn in by the action. They freeze, they watch the action. And then as soon as there's a break in the action and everything dies down, they're like, oh, you know what? I need to eat those Doritos. Hold on real quick. Crinkle, 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 crinkle. Like, yes.
I'm a big fan of crinkling.
Dude, like, I mean, I really wanted to see this movie in the theater, so I just kind of, I braced myself.
Yeah.
I sat in my chair.
You really wanted to see this one in the theaters, really?
I mean, like, I was excited, like, for whatever reason.
Oh, like, just to see, like, a new Pixar movie. Like, you wanted to see this one.
Yes, I wanted to, because it was a Pixar film and I was excited and my wife wanted to see it as well. So I was like, let's go do it. It'll be fun. You know, of course, the problem is that when you go to a matinee on a Sunday on a rainy day, like the whole theater is packed with kids. And for the most part, the kids were fine. And it was the adults that were making the noise because they were,
of course,
they were stopping for 2 seconds. So.
Well, then
enjoy the film. Anyways, that's I'm off my soapbox.
All right.
Be kind to the theater. That's all I'm trying to say.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah, Pixar holds a serious spot in my heart, and I'm excited about this one. So we're going to go see it this week, hopefully.
It's good times. Good times indeed. Oh, like good Pixar quality recommended, just like you'd recommend any other Pixar film. Good stuff.
There is a movie on Netflix right now called Pixar, The Life at Pixar or something like that. And it's a documentary that shows from the beginning of Pixar's time all the way through the end or through current. And I think at the time they were releasing Incredibles, and it's absolutely phenomenal. You should definitely watch it if you haven't
seen it.
Okay, so I watched Dragon Age Dawn of the Seeker, which is a new animated feature film set in the Dragon Age universe, and it is the first animated feature film set in the Dragon Age universe. And it was done by a Japanese studio, dubbed, of course, originally in Japanese, and then redubbed in English for the West. And I actually really enjoyed it. It was a side story that doesn't star the Grey Wardens. It doesn't star Hawk. It doesn't star anybody of any real significance other than Cassandra. And if Scott, if you remember the member of the Chantry that was doing the interrogations during Dragon Age 2, do you remember her?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so this is an animated film all about her and her story. Yeah. And it's actually really, really cool. She ended up being one of my favorite characters by the end of this little animated feature. It all deals with like this big conspiracy with the Chantry. I'm not going to get into it too much, but if you like a little bit more, you know, if you want to know more about the universe and kind of want to see more stories, there's blood mages, there's golems, there's ogres, you know, there's dragons, there's Templars, there's all the stuff you love from Dragon Age. And of course, the character of Cassandra Pendergast is a total badass, and you'll end up really loving her by the end of it as well. It's out right now. I think it came out right around the 1st of June, end of May. And if you get the Blu-ray, it comes with it. It's a Blu-ray combo pack, so you'll get the DVD and the Blu-ray.
Was it the same writer?
It is not the same writer, so it's not done by David Gator, but I guess it is approved by the team and everything like that.
Okay.
And in terms of where it takes place in the storyline, it takes place after the events of Dragon Age 2, but before she starts the interrogation of Varric. So the events of Dragon Age 2 have already transpired, but if you remember playing Dragon Age 2, a lot of it takes place during like flashbacks during the interrogation of Varric. So the interrogation of Varric hasn't really happened yet. So it's kind of at a cool place in the series. Like, you know, all that crazy stuff happened with Hawk and everything, and that's like briefly mentioned, but it is mainly just about Cassandra and, you know, her story and kind of who she is and who the Seekers are as an organization, because they're kind of like this mysterious, you know, sort of like the Secret Service, if you will, of the Dragon Age universe. Like their main job is to protect the divine, and you don't know too much about them. So you'll learn a lot more about them in this, which is cool.
So could I have... Could I have enjoyed this without playing any of the games?
If you're a fan of fantasy, I could say yeah, probably. But the thing about the Dragon Age universe is they use a lot of lingo that if you're not familiar with the lingo and you don't know like what the School of the Magi is, and you don't know what the Chantry is, you don't know who the Divine is, you don't know what an Archdemon is, it's not the same language as like Tolkien or Dungeons and Dragons. Like it's its own established language, so you have to learn that first, I think, to really get it. And that's like playing Dragon Age Origins is sort of like your 60-hour tutorial to the world. So I would say play through Origins at least first, and then maybe play Watch Dawn of the Seeker.
So this week, the question was kind of inspired by Clerks and Family Guy, where they joke about people who were in the Star Wars universe but had nothing to do with the war, where they were just kind of like sitting around on the Death Star or you know, whatever it might have been, serving drinks at the bar and get caught up in all this crazy shit. So question was, if you could have any job in the Star Wars universe that wasn't Jedi, Starfighter, Bounty Hunter, Sith, etc., what the heck would you do? And we got some awesome answers, and we are going to go through them right now.
Cool. Our first response comes from our buddy Nate Hales from Press to Reset and Reset Transmission Podcast. We appreciate you guys and everything you do. Shout outs, as always. He says, probably like an aide to a senator. That way I could just travel around Coruscant being awesome. And it's interesting that a lot of these responses have something to do with like being awesome in the Star Wars universe. Like that's kind of like the qualifying requirement, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Ash, why don't you go ahead and give your response?
Me. Okay. So me, I think I'd probably end up being like the guy that has to clean out the fucking trash compactor on the Death Star with that big like eyeball slug thing. I'd be
that's
like
the job you want. You can have any job you want.
No, I mean, I can have any job I want. I'd probably end up being like the guy that polishes the stormtrooper armor.
I like that any job you want means you keep defeating yourself into doing something
I just
lesser.
I know that I would never end up with like the dream job. Okay, I would be a space podcaster and just tell like stories of the war to people across the galaxy and tell really shitty jokes.
I think that's a noble profession.
A space podcaster. So our missing compadre, Hillary Heskett, Hillary Heskett
@1L2T's,
says cantina singer, but definitely not at Jabba's place. I'm thinking somewhere like Alderaan. Oops.
Oh, too soon.
I don't think she wants to fall into that trapdoor. Should she hit a wrong note,
or get groped by Jabba, too.
Or get groped by Jabba's tentacle.
I didn't think that alien in the cantina had a really good singing voice in the remake anyways.
Yeah.
So Carlo, who is Platinum Fist on Twitter, says I'd probably end up working tech support on board a capital ship cruiser.
I like these like these like they could do anything they want. And they're like, oh well, I'd probably just.
I think his hashtag is updates, patches, and troubleshooting. Oh my.
He's realistic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh boy. Chap, which is eChap33, says clone engineer on Kamino. They seem to do well for themselves. See, you be a wealthy cloner, and then you go to your summer home wherever on some other planet.
And see, this brings me right into my answer.
Excellent.
Which was I would be like the guy who manufactures the chairs for TIE fighters, because they go through like a billion of those fuckers a day, and I would just be so loaded. It'd be like I'd be able to just producing chairs for them all day long.
True, you're just fighter chairs.
You're just filling a demand.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
I think that's
a genius idea.
How many of those things do they blow up every day? Those things are like, they're nothing to this to the Empire, apparently. So
it's a huge fleet, man.
Yeah, I know. I know.
That's you can win that make, contract.
That's why I'm going to make chairs.
Indeed. You want to take the next one?
So Onyx Primal says, clone slash stormtrooper armor supplier, got to make them credit. See, you just find a demand and you fill it, and you're going to make $1 billion in the Empire.
at GameDog 2408, who is Lance Spearman, says that he would love to be a hut dancer.
So he's going to take on that risk.
That now, is a pretty brave man.
Now, do all the huts have dancers or just Jabba?
Well, all the huts do. They're all kind of like evil crime
lords. It's like the pleasure dome. Yeah, you can have whatever kind of decadent things you want in there, I suppose.
This name is pronounced Satil Shan, by the way.
Indeed. That's Old Republic style, isn't it?
No, I think that's Clone Wars.
No, Satil Shan is SWTOR era, because that's Bastila Shan's descendant.
Oh, okay, that's right.
If I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
So go ahead and read this one.
Hold on, I'm quickly consulting the Wikipedia. Yeah, she's like the female protagonist that was in all of the trailers like leading up to the release of SWTOR.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow. So our bud Stumpy Natalie Stachowski says Satil Shan's personal assistant, I'd get her coffee or whatever. And I think the or whatever is the really important part. You know, just do what, you know, like get coffee, we'll just hang out, you know, like
or whatever.
Yeah.
Play some of that robo chess that they play.
Schedule your meetings, yeah, anything.
So Cohen at Maliflam, our buddy Cohen says, I want to be in the Max Rebo band. Is that the...
That's the Bith. I think that's the Bith band. I think the Max Rebo band is the other band in the Cantina. It kind of looks like the band from Captain EO. It's got elephant guy in it.
Yeah.
I think Max Rebo is the elephant guy, if I'm not mistaken, remember correctly.
I'm glad we have you here, Scott.
Again, I will...
Yeah, he's like the wealth of Star Wars information.
I will double-check the Wikipedia if I can get it to load.
It's like when we used to play Star Wars Trivial Pursuit, and it'd be like, Matt, what was the stripe color on the fourth loading bay in the third ship on Star Wars Return of the Jedi? And I'm like, what? And then I'm like, I don't know, red. And it's like, blue, you're wrong. And it's like, Scott, who was the furry fellow that hung out with Han Solo? And I was like, what? How does he get those? He should totally be getting the color one.
We were reading for the children's cards for me. It was like that episode of Family Guy where I find out I'm retarded.
No, I just meant that you probably did know the stripe color. Yeah,
sure. I don't know.
Those ones. Matt, it's blue.
It's blue.
So Max Rebo is the, I guess, the organist, if you want to call him that.
Yeah.
And I really thought that band was the same band from Captain EO. I always thought it was like the same. Maybe they were just on tour at the time.
Who knows?
Doing like a little stint with Michael Jackson on the way to see... oh God, what was her name? She was in
Bubbles the Monkey?
No, the woman, Angelica Houston. Yeah, when they went to go visit Angelica Houston in her pit of despair.
What is happening?
Anybody? Captain Neo? Anything? Come on.
Dude, I haven't seen it since I was 10. I don't know.
Oh man. I think I've seen it like twice last year. So our buddy Justin Banks, who is at Midtown 583, says Darth Vader's inhaler refiller. That seems like a very realistic job again, you know? Like,
it seems like, though, if you work for Darth Vader, your chance of, you know, dying. Or is it like Robot Chicken where they're like, no, we just pretend to die and then we just give him a fake pair of glasses and he shows up next day.
I mean, maybe he depends on you, you know what I mean? So maybe you've really got him by the cojones that case.
True. Melissa K. at the Quad Skater, friend of the podcast Reset Transmission, she says... A nerf herder.
Question mark.
Fuzzy nerf herder.
And I believe she followed it up saying a cute scruffy nerf herder. What is the word? The quote? A scruffy, no good.
Scuttle, no.
Yeah. It's like yeah. It's like when she's in a fit of rage.
Yeah.
Stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
This is the quote you're looking for.
Okay.
But I mean, I really think a nerf is really just some sort of like cow style creature. So
it is. It has an anteater nose, though. I've seen them.
Do like a little cattle. cattle wrangling. Oh, really? That's cool.
I ran over a hill and I was like, that's what a Nerf looks like.
So Scott, what is your answer?
I came up with two because I couldn't really decide, but they're both about the same genre. Right. Anyways, so job number one would be, you know, on the Death Star where they're like standing on the bridge and they always walk by that those two pits of people that are doing like God knows yeah. what. I want to be in that pit. I just want to, because I can be a fly on the wall to everything that's going on, you know, on the bridge of the Death Star. I mean, on the yeah. bridge of like a Star Destroyer. But at the same time, I can just keep my head down in my terminal so I don't get choked out when I do something wrong.
There you go.
Yeah. So job number two, depending on, you know, the timeline and where these jobs take place, is that I would be a librarian at the Jedi temple.
Yeah,
cool.
Because that seems pretty dope, too, because you get to rub elbows with, you know, Jedi, pursuit of knowledge, all that stuff. I think that would be a sweet gig.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. Yeah,
be all about it.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
So our buddy Amanda at Fluid Fire says, seems to be being an arms dealer or whatnot would be pretty handy. Sure as hell wouldn't be a scientist.
That's yeah, true. Scientists get blown up quite a lot. Wyatt Kane, oh my Wyatt Kane, says Imperial test pilot. So he would just want to fly the stuff
before he gets
fight. Yeah, yeah. Just fly the experimental fun stuff.
Yeah, and this is, you can have whatever job you want. P.S. You know, like,
yeah, whatever job. If you manufacturing chairs on
yeah.
for TIE fighters.
Like, if you wanted to be one of Padme's like decoys, I think, you know, you could probably put yourself in that position. You can really do anything you want here.
I did. Melissa did say that she would be part of Padme's like cadre.
So she would be a Padme decoy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent, handmaiden.
So finally, Anna Schumann from Press to Reset. And I want to read this because there's actually a whole conversation that happens here. She says, "I'd be the coolest bounty hunter ever. Have a sidekick named Punch, and we'd kill all the people and collect all the bounties." And then Nate replies and says, "You read that part where you couldn't be a bounty hunter, right?" And then Anna responds and says, "Nope, cool enough to still be a bounty hunter. Honestly, my eyes skipped over that." She half read our question and then answered it immediately.
It was nice of her to answer at all.
It was. We appreciate.
And she would have a sidekick, too. I think she's elaborating on the on the premise.
I guess you could technically be a sidekick for a bounty hunter since we didn't rule.
That's true.
I suppose you could. I mean, those ships don't fly themselves, right? I mean, is it really one person for every ship? Maybe you can be a crew member or
there you go,
maintenance person, yeah. Or you just hide out.
Cook.
Yeah, indeed.
The cook on the board of a Corellian cruiser.
They do have a kitchen or something, don't they?
Soup's ready.
They have to. They got to eat.
Yeah, you really don't get to see a lot of that ship in those movies, do you?
No,
that's
probably
true.
Costs a lot of money to make those things.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, that about sums it up for Rated NA65. As always, you can find us at nerdappropriate.com. You can reach us on Twitter at nerdappropriate. And we are, of course, Matt, Scott, and Ash if you want to email us at nerdappropriate.com.
And you can find us on Facebook/nerdappropriate. And we are on Goodreads trying to get it kickstarted. I do have a book, Scott, so we will be discussing this. I found a book that I think would be a good starter book.
Excellent.
Sweet.
So we will get into that. But that is it for this week. That was episode 65. Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right. See you next week.
See ya.